Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR 96.3, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramonte Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, as many of you hopefully know, the nation's capital has a rich history. And now there is something coming down the pike, like very soon, that will drop that history right in your laps. WHUT, Howard University's own owned and operated PBS station, will present 202 Day, programming from local creators that will highlight that history I mentioned and the untold stories that are right here in D.C. We're going to talk about some of those stories tonight. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight in studio, Angie Ann. She is the director of content at Howard University Television, better known as WHUT. Sharvis Campbell, executive director of Home Rule Music and Film Preservation Foundation. And Beverly Lindsay Johnson. She's the producer and director of Fat Boy, the Billy Stewart story. We'll also be joined by a guest later on in the show. So we got plenty to talk about today. 202 Day, Angie, I'm going to start with you since you are the director and content creator of WHUT.
Yeah.
Tell us about 202 Day, what's behind this programming, and why are we seeing it?
Oh, I'm so excited, man. I can't tell you how good it feels to be home, because Howard University is home for me, always has been. I come from two parents who were born and raised in D.C., Northwest. Mom is a graduate of Coolidge Senior High School. Dad, a graduate of Eastern Senior High School. I'm shouting them out now because they're listening. I know they are. Whole family is D.C. And then to grow up here, and then to go to school here, and then to have had an amazing radio career after Howard for the last 15 years of my life, to live my dream here at home. And to be able to leave that and knowing that I did everything I wanted to do in radio, but also knowing that I had developed a level of expertise in this media space, that I can now help develop new talent. I could develop ideas. I can manage ideas and manage folks now, right? I knew it was time for me to move into a higher level in that sense. And so when the opportunity to come on as director of content at WHUT, where I started as a student my freshman year, I started at Spotlight when I thought I was going to be on BET. I thought I was going to be Ananda Lewis.
Who didn't?
You know, yeah, no. Nah, my plan was to be Ananda Lewis, who went to Howard. Uh-huh. That was part of why I went here, too. And so in that, I started at WHUT. I was a floor director. And that experience, being around professionals and learning the television side of things and just how heavy a lift it was, made me say, okay, I'm going to go do radio. Radio is a little bit more. It was a little more fun. I get to sit in a box. It's not a lot of people involved. You know, I get to have fun, play my music, headphones on, right? But to be able to come back to WHUT as director of content has been such an amazing opportunity for me, one, to give back to my university, to continue to give back to the community, the DMV, which I've been serving for so long, where my heart is, where I'm from. And I'm coming back and I'm reinventing myself. This is a different capacity. And so the first thing I thought when I came to WHUT, I'm like, man, we gotta reconnect with our community. We gotta reconnect with our intended audience. Do we even know who our intended audience is? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, fun fact, since it's Black History Month, WHUT is the only HBCU to hold a PBS license. That's a lot of power. So we have this opportunity to provide content to PBS that who doesn't have a lot of Black content, right? We have that opportunity to be developing that and cultivating that right here in our hometown. And we've got amazing creators who I'm sitting with right now that you're gonna hear from, who have created, who are storytellers. And we gotta be telling our own stories, especially as the DMV continues to change and evolve. And so you've got a lot of people who are moving into this area. They need to not just see murals of what DC used to be. They need to really be able to turn on a channel or watch it online or get it on their PBS app and turn us on and see all of these amazing stories that made DC, that has made DC what it is today. And so 202 Day is my first programming initiative that is all about celebrating DC creators, independent producers, and DC stories. So what you're going to watch tomorrow from 6 a.m. to midnight is how I envision WHUT moving forward. It will be when you turn it on, you see you. And you see you in multitudes of in various capacities, not just entertainment, but you see your stories, you see your history, you see your past, your present, your future. It should all be represented. And so that is, it's a heavy lift, but it is one that I'm excited to be a part of. But yes, 202 Day is all about celebrating everything DC and these stories that you would have never, I would have never heard of these stories if I didn't turn on WHUT. And that's what you're going to get tomorrow.
Well, you know the story of African Americans in this nation is about lifting, right?
Uplift.
Absolutely. So you're right in the pocket on that. I realize I don't think I gave out the number. So if you have a question or comment, be sure to give us a call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. We're talking about 202 Day. And if you don't know, you realize that's the area code, right? I'll make a little joke in our phone call today about the 202 where I got thrown from. For a minute, but I don't want to throw the show off. Beverly Lindsay Johnson.
Yes.
You are the producer and director of Fat Boy, okay? And we say that in all sincerity and sweetness, right? The Billy Stewart story. And I have seen that. And his is quite a story. Tell us about the production of it, why you were telling the story, and who Billy Stewart is or was, for those who don't know.
Well, I'm glad to be on the program today. It's an honor, and it's welcoming me back to campus.
Everybody's coming back.
It's home.
I know. And so, Billy Stewart. Who is Billy Stewart? Oh, my God. Billy Stewart was one of the most talented balladeers, R&B balladeers from Washington, D.C., he captured the 1960s with his sound. His sound was so unique. He had, his rolling tongue and his scatting. Made him who he is. He was from Washington, D.C., went to Armstrong High School, in which there were a lot of singing artists that came from Armstrong High School. And so Billy Stewart, he was just a phenomenal singer. He ended up recording for Chess Records out of Chicago. And the one thing about music in Washington, D.C., there is so much talent here. And back in the day, while there was so much talent, there was not a music industry, mm-hmm. if you will. You know, so you had Motown that had, you know, the recordings and the distribution of their music. And you may have had small recording companies here in the nation's capital, but they did not have the ability to distribute the music nationwide. So a lot of songs that the talent recorded here in D.C., stayed in D.C. because D.C. had black radio.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Okay, so you can hear some of the local artists that their music never really went out of D.C.
And for the people who, a lot of times you don't know the names, but you know the music.
Exactly.
And tell us like one or two of Billy Stewart's biggest hits that people, if they would hear it, would know the song, but not put his name to the song.
Absolutely. Summertime. Who can
his
not,
version of it.
His version mm-hmm. of Summertime. One of the most fantastic, remarkable covers of the song Summertime. I Do Love You.
I think that's the big one that most folks know, right? And it was redone
yes.
by, I'm trying to think of the group in the 70s. It'll come to me. Music director Angie Anschutter.
GQ,
right. Mm-hmm. Not to take anything away from Billy Stewart, but you know, that's the one I heard later on.
Okay. And Sitting in the Park.
Mm-hmm. Another
Cross
big one.
Cross My
right?
Heart. Mm-hmm. Reap What You Sow. And so people do recognize the titles. If they don't recognize the titles, they recognize the song when they hear it. But Billy Stewart was just a national hit that came from Washington, D.C. And I have loved Billy Stewart music ever since I was 12 years old. And I first heard I Do Love You.
And that's what brought you into wanting to tell his story. So yes. You had a personal connection in a way of enjoying his music, which often, right? You creators, that's where it comes from.
I have the 45s at home.
Come on now.
I must admit, I have a box somewhere in my office. I think when my aunt passed, you know, she had all these 45s, and I can't get rid of them, even though I know I should. But LPs are coming back, so yeah. 45s, though.
Yeah, I mean,
don't know.
You can always digitize 45s
that's true.
If you have to.
Well, you asked
we'll
too
them
much.
We'll take HR Records. So.
Okay, that's a whole thing. That's Charvis now. Yeah. Charvis is coming. We have to talk then offset if I can make some money on those 45. Charvis Campbell, you're the executive director of Home Rule Music and Film Preservation Foundation. Your documentary is Black Fire. Tell us about it.
Sure.
And why that documentary, why that subject matter? What's it about?
Sure, I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you. I feel like I'm home as well.
Another HU alum, correct?
Indeed. Thank you. So Blackfire Records is an independent black record label, jazz record label from the 70s, started by a guy named Jimmy Gray and his partner, Plunky, from Oneness of Juju. So Plunky was a musician, he still is, very active. Did a wonderful performance with WHUT that you'll see tomorrow.
Yep.
But in the 70s, Jimmy was a distributor for a number of different record labels and realized that there was an opportunity to really grow some music out of D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So we came together with Plunky and they formed Black Fire Records, which essentially is about black spirituality, black family, black entrepreneurship. And of course, black music, great black music. EU, Experience Unlimited, mm-hmm. their first album, wasn't go-go. It was a combination of black jazz, soul, funk, some rock mixed in.
And will viewers learn that in this documentary?
They learn a lot about that.
Because that's a big one. You know, most folks, yep. you tie EU, you're not thinking...
Oh, sure. Sugar Bear talks about it in the documentary, mm-hmm. how he listened to Plunky and listened to the sounds, the call and response, and really applied that to his music and really formed that go-go sound later on.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, it wasn't go-go. It was really kind of... You know, that jazz, soul, and rock fusion. Which
and many,
really cool.
many lovers, you know, of Chuck Brown, DC's own, you know, he had a strong base in jazz
sure,
music and all types of music. You know, you hear go-go, but most music has some combination, right, of other past references. And I'm assuming that, where did you get the title from, though, Black Fire?
So essentially, that's the name of the record label.
Okay. Right.
And Jimmy, his on air, because Jimmy Gray. Was an on-air DJ,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, he used that Black Fire as his name mm-hmm. on air. So he would, when he was on air, it would be Black Fire.
That's a strong Black Fire. That's a strong name.
It is.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It really is.
So Angie, when we're talking about these first two documentaries, Billy yep. Stewart, Black Fire, you know, we're really talking about the arts here in D.C. And you know, there's so much beyond music, but just in music, right? Chuck Brown, mm-hmm. Van McCoy, mm-hmm. Marvin Gaye.
Sure.
The importance of in that sense of the arts of telling that story.
Yeah.
And I know 202 Day is going to tell a whole bunch of different stories. And
totally.
We're going to even talk about a little bit later on in the show. But specifically about arts, that tends yeah. to really hit people in a spot because almost everybody loves music, right? Everybody
100%.
Loves some part of art. So what was your thinking behind that, especially with these first ones coming out dealing with music and art?
Absolutely. I think art is activism. And I think art and activism go hand in hand, especially in our communities. And so how we drive activism is typically through the art. That's why when these candidates trying to get your vote, what do they go? Who do they call? Sugar Bear and EU,
mm-hmm.
Rare Essence, Backyard Band. The music drives the messages, the call and response. It reaches our heart, reaches our spirit. You know, my grandfather who died of Alzheimer's, I'll never forget when he was like towards the end. Where the Alzheimer's had like fully like was really had taken over. You know, he didn't really know us. I remember somebody put on a record one day. We was just outside because that's what we do. In the summer, I remember a record play. Actually, it was Blurred Lines of Robin Thicke.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, it has that Marvin Gaye. It has a Marvin Gaye, sample on it. And it was like my grandfather came alive. You know, it was an amazing experience to see that. That's how powerful music is. When you can lose everything you know, a beat, a rhythm, that tongue roll of Billy Stewart, you'll hear it. Now here's the wild part. When I remember when I heard that, when I was looking at the documentary, I heard that. I said, I know that, right? Now, I've never heard of Billy Stewart. You know, they sampled that tongue roll of his is in a Rihanna record. It's called Cockiness.
Yeah, look at that.
Cockiness. She used that. The producer used his tongue roll because I'm like, yo, I know that I've heard this voice. So, again, the arts is so imperative as a part of pushing this activism of us being heard and us being able to tell our stories and create the change we want to see. We got to know where we came from. We got to get people active in the history. You got to know your history. To get that interest takes stories like these, and the arts really drives that, really catches your attention.
And, folks, you're going to get it on 202 Day, which starts tomorrow. Angie,
6 a.m.
Again, turn repeat, tell folks we're going to see the Billy Stewart story tomorrow.
That's one of many.
We're going to see Blackfire tomorrow.
Yep.
Starting at
6 a.m. Go to WHUT.org. Go until midnight.
And that means, Sharvis Campbell, your work will be on air.
On air at 10 a.m. and again at 8 p.m. Mm-hmm.
And Beverly Lindsay Johnson, the Billy Stewart story.
The Billy Stewart story airs at 2:30 p.m.
Folks, you have it. It is the start of a movement. We're going to continue conversation, though, so don't go anywhere. You can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on whur.com. or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR 96.3. This discussion will continue on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight we are talking about 202 Day.
Yeah.
And what is that? That's about the rich history of the nation's capital and how you're going to see that on WHUT starting tomorrow. We're talking about it tonight. Phone lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. With us tonight to talk about 202 Day is Angie Ann. She is the Director of Content with Howard University Television, better known as WHUT. And also with us is Anna Reed Gerard. She's the producer, director, and writer of The Last Battlefront, The Quest for the Vote in D.C. Again, questions or comments for Angie or Anna, double A's, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Anna, let's start with you. The Last Battlefront, the quest for the vote in D.C., that quest has been going on for a while. What drew you to this subject, and why do a documentary on it?
I'm a historical filmmaker, and I've lived in the district for 32 years with my husband, and I was mystified by the fact that folks living, I'm not from D.C., I was mystified by the fact that folks living in D.C. didn't have representation in Congress, and they didn't have real self-government, and I thought, how could this have happened? And there were some other very fine films that had been made, but no one had done the history to figure out how this happened. So what really triggered it was that classmates of my youngest son at Wilson, what was called Wilson High School at that time, it was now, I think, called Jackson Reed High School, they went on a hunger strike on behalf of D.C. about 11 years ago. And I said, oh, please, they really lasted a while. And I said, let's make a film. Save your health. Let's make a film. So we did. We started then. And I began to look at four historic turning points, moments in time in history. I didn't know what I'd discovered, but I discovered that race was one of the two central reasons why this was going on. I wasn't, and so I just, in some ways, I chose the right turning points, but I wasn't really sure at the beginning. So I went from like 1783 to 1801. That was the first one. And the second one was the Civil War period and just afterwards. And that was 1862 to 1874. And then 100 years later, in the 60s and 70s, in the Civil Rights Movement, and then today. So it was was amazing.
So when you say race was the issue, meaning of the large population of African Americans in the District of Columbia,
that's
and giving them sort of the same voting rights as you would a state would be problematic, just because what that would mean politically in the House of Representatives and the Senate. Is that correct?
Yes, and what race seemed to be the thread running through the whole, all four moments in time.
Do you still find that to be the case now, as the city is changing, and there's still not a movement for that vote?
I think it's still the case. I think that there's a great deal. First of all, there isn't a lot of understanding of what's going on, and there is a politics involved in here too. I mean, they don't want two more Democrats to go into the Senate, but what blocked this was an effort, a fear of the black vote. That was from the Civil War time to today, but was really amazing seeing how the thread that was running through. Because at the beginning, in the very earliest period, there was all these fights about where should power lie? Should it be a centralized government or decentralized government? And so, it's too much to go into, but the bottom line was there was a choice. They chose to set up the capital of the country on the Potomac River. But it was part of a deal, and so that the Southerners, Southern founders, agreed to pay the Revolutionary War debts as long as they put the capital in on the Potomac. Which was, there was nothing here.
Right, that was a big agreement of where it would be. A lot of people don't know it used to be in New York. It was in Philadelphia. It was in Annapolis. I think it might have been in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And so much of that history, and as Angie was talking about when we were talking about the arts, you know, really the past, as Faulkner said, really isn't the past, right?
It's not the past.
It never leaves us, so it's all tied to the present. And so Angie, the director of content at WHUT, when you hear Anna talking about a deep subject like this, right? But then we had Sharvis come in, and we were talking about Black Fire and the music labels, and Beverly talking about Billy Stewart. Just in these three, you've got a potpourri of different things. And so when we're talking about what folks are going to see tomorrow from 6 a.m. till
midnight.
So it's an all-day affair.
All day.
Is this what, one, viewers should be ready for, that you're going to see a little bit of everything?
Absolutely.
Arts, heavy stuff, race, which we often can't get away from no matter what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
And so what Anna is doing, was that part of your intent, too, to say we want to hit all of those little pressure points, you know,
100%.
Not just one kind of
Yeah, because it's a sample. You know, we're not in a position right now where we're going to run, like, a ton of different programs. So I wanted to make sure that we were very intentional with how we curated our programming for the day. And The Last Battlefront is one of the first programs that I received when I got here to say, you know, do we want to run this or not? Because that's what I do as director of content. I go through programs, pitches, and determine, like, is this going to be a good fit for Howard University Television? And so when I watched it, again, all these years, I didn't see every, you know, all the representation with no taxation with no
that's
representation.
Right, the tags, yeah.
I didn't see the tags forever. I know about the fight for us to be a state and all that, but I didn't really know. And what I appreciated about watching the documentary was it's not about swaying you left or right. You're going to draw your own opinion. Some people think D.C. should be a state. Some people don't. But what you need to know is the history of it, at least how it's where it's rooted. I did not know that this had been a fight for so long. I didn't know what the base of the fight for the vote was about, and going all the way back. I mean, going back to slavery, and how we even became Chocolate City. Like, I've just always known Chocolate City. To see how
that
it became
contraband,
the base. Yeah,
the contraband that comes in right.
Yeah,
once
I didn't,
the Civil War is going on.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's how it ended up happening. And then seeing how D.C. is changing, and now it feels like more than ever, it's closer to becoming a 51st state, right? And that was Anna and I have had a lot of conversation about what happens after you watch the documentary. The conversation. It's a great conversation piece. Afterwards, because again, it's not a propaganda piece. This is just here's what it is. What did you get from that? And the conversation I'm having is for this to be rooted in race the way it was, and to see that the by the time we probably do get statehood, this is not Chocolate City anymore. You know, what does that mean? You know, what does that really mean?
And what does that mean for stations like WHUT?
Absolutely.
Howard University, historically black institution.
Mm-hmm.
As the city is changing, the demographics are changing. What does that mean for WHUT? Is the mission still the same regardless of how the demographics change?
People have challenged me on that. You know, even people here, as I got started at WHUT, that was kind of one of the things that people were trying to push to me was, well, it's not Chocolate City anymore. The demographic has changed. I said, but the history is still the same, right? So the history is imperative. No matter what any place, if you go to Richmond or anywhere else, Did they not still have them Confederate statues there until it was forced to cut? It took a whole riot, people dying recently, for them to even say, okay, we should take this down. So there's never an issue of repeating the same stories over and over again. Why can't we do the same, even no matter who's in Richmond? Richmond could be all black, it could be all white, it could be whatever, but you still were going to see them same Confederate statues, right? I believe the same applies in D.C. then. It doesn't matter who's here. It's not even, it goes beyond race. It goes beyond, it's about the story of the district. And what I loved about The Last Battlefront is it's telling a story that needs to be heard, not just for any particular race, for all of us who are here. And for those of us who, this is my roots. And I didn't even know the full capacity of this story until I watched The Last Battlefront.
And Anna, why did you bring your documentary to WHUT? Now, you might have presented it to the other PBS stations here in the city, but do you see it having sort of a different sort of resonance airing on WHUT?
Well, I'm grateful to be on here, and I was grateful to Angie and to WHUT that there was real support for the film that I hadn't had as much before.
Why not, you think?
Well, I think that I had been at WIDA for a while, but I'm grateful to them that they added. But there wasn't, they're dealing more on, like, nationally with the national programs, and I really wanted others to get involved in trying to understand that there's a really rich history here of people we don't even know. I mean, this is a one-hour film. And the one of the fascinating parts was in the Civil War period. And we've got Frederick Douglass and his sons who are actively involved in promoting the vote for African Americans. And all that we can include in that 1 hour were their images. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even bring in the statements by Frederick Douglass and others. So they're just one piece of this. There are so many. This is through the lives and voices of Washingtonians. That's what this film is about. And it's a very, very rich history. And also you see in the early on, there was the D.C. was founded on the Potomac in order to preserve slavery.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Virginia and Maryland were the big slave
Correct.
States. And so that was the deal that was made by the Southern founders. They were wanting to hold on to have the capital in an area where they were strong. Mm-hmm. And then the main buildings were built by slaves.
Well, you know, it's so interesting that you talk about that before we go to break. Maryland's first African-American governor actually did his first State of the State address today, and he talked about, and I think he even said it in his inaugural address, about that Capitol building in Annapolis that was built by slaves. And he was saying today that one of his first initiatives is for public service.
Mm.
And he said he looked up the word, and the Latin meaning of service was slavery.
Mm.
And so he thought it was so appropriate that he was giving a speech today making public service one of his top initiatives. So I'm sure your untold story, The Last Battlefront, the quest for the vote in D.C. will hit home especially for lifelong D.C. residents. And so we thank you so much for being with us. And we've got to make sure that Angie Ange tells us again before we take a quick break, Angie, how we'll be able to see Anna's documentary and the others.
Absolutely. You got to check your local listings. Of course, check your local listings. But Channel 32, of course, is for those of us D.C. residents out there. And then you have WHUT.org. You can watch it live online. You can watch it through PBS, the PBS app. Just make Howard University television your station. WHUT.org has all the details. You'll see the Last Battlefront. Again, you'll see that airing at 7 p.m. Definitely check it out. You'll see it at noon and 12 p.m. on WHUT.
Double dose.
Yeah.
Anna Reed Girard, thank you so much for being with us. Producer, director, and writer of The Last Battlefront, The Quest for the Vote in D.C. We're going to continue the Insight segment. We're going to take a quick time out, but we'll be right back right after this break. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Okay, coming up tomorrow, 202 Day, it's going to be airing on WHUT, and it's going to be telling so much of the history that has taken place here in Washington, D.C., and I mean it's going back to the 19th century all the way up to the present. So, folks,
correct.
If you're not early morning risers, get up. If you've got a DVR, use it, but we'd rather you watch it while you're sitting there. But from 6 a.m. all the way until midnight, there is going to be programming on telling you about some of the stories that you may not even know that are centered here in Washington, D.C. And we've had some documentarians on with us. Staying with us is Angie Ann. She's the director of content with Howard University Television, also known as WHUT. So, Ange, I wanted to... Angie, I wanted to talk to you also about, in the context of this 202 Day and this programming that's on arts and history and voting and, and just a lot of other stuff. We also know, like, in the present, just today, a Metro worker shot and killed at the Potomac Avenue Metro Station. A couple of weeks ago, Karan Blake, 13-year-old, you know, shot and killed in Brookland. So there is a lot of stuff that's going on that has a negative, you know, bent to it. And especially when you're talking about African Americans, oftentimes our stories are based in trauma. So the role that you feel WHUT could play, especially now in the current, when we see so much that we have to report, but what you're trying to do with HUT and especially with 202 Day. You're not trying to shy away from some of the negative, but I'm assuming you're also trying to show a balance of that potpourri of stories.
100%. One of our series is by our very own Easy Street from HUR. He did a five-part series called Do Better DC. We're running that as well twice. And again, sometimes some of you are early risers, so we got to set a program for the early folks. And then those of you that come home and you're trying to relax a little bit, you can turn it on. You're going to get the same programs. But Do Better DC is about the nonviolence and violence reduction efforts in DC. And what I love about this series that Easy Street put together is it is the residents speaking about how this is affecting them. It is, you hear from victims who have been shot and remain in their communities. And you see how it affects all aspects of the community, from the families to the loved ones that are left behind to their friends, you know. And then, but then it's not just all about the, like you said, the trauma part. It's, what are we doing, though? Like, what's being done? Because that always becomes the question. Oh, so-and-so ain't doing nothing for the people. No, there are many efforts that are created in this city. There are a lot of efforts, but it's like, you know, we still need to do better. And what I like about his series is it calls for accountability on all fronts. Like, we can't just blame government, we can't just blame law enforcement, and we can't just blame each other and poverty and everything. It's all of it. All of it has impact overall. And so he did a really good job of showing that impact from various angles. And that's what, to me, WHUT can be, what Howard University Television can be. it is us telling our stories from our perspective, that it's not just a news story or a headline. It's got to go deeper than that. And that's something that we can do because we understand the deeper impact of it. And so we can go into someone's home and talk to them and get them to share their story with us or share their perspective with us. We can go and sit with the police chiefs and the government side as well and talk to them and bring the concerns of the community right to them and say, explain this or help us understand this or what can we all be doing? And so that's the power of a WHUT, is that where others look at it as another report, we look at it as that's your brother, that's your sister, that's your cousin, that's your uncle that is impacted by this. And so what does that mean to us? Like, us being able to have that freedom to do that is necessary. It's important. And Howard University Television should be the open door for our perspective to be shared and heard and seen.
D.C. culture.
Yeah.
Now, how we define that, I guess, is subjective.
Totally.
But when you think about that, what comes to mind to you?
DC culture?
Because HUT, I'm assuming that's part of what you're trying to present, right?
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
What's DC culture to you might be different to me.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. I mean, you know, I think I don't know that I focus so much on the culture as the perspective. And you know, it's so funny when I hear people talk to me about diversity, as if Black people lack diversity. And I remember that being one of the first things I noticed coming to Howard University was its diversity, was the fact. And I remember part of what made me come here was I was on a tour at 17. And
tell folks where you're from originally also.
I'm from here. I'm from PG County. Mm-hmm. I grew up in PG County. My parents are from D.C., but I grew up over off of Riggs Road. Mm-hmm. Went to High Point High School and graduated from Elizabeth Seton in Blainsburg.
So. Duval, I'm a Duval grad.
Oh, okay. We used to go right around the corner with y'all. I used to go run around the track in Duval. But yeah, I mean, I remember going to Howard and I was doing a tour. My mom went to Howard, so I'm a Howard baby. Mm-hmm. My aunts went to Howard, Howard baby. So I didn't want to go to Howard because I grew up here.
Right.
You know, I felt like I needed to go elsewhere. But I did a tour as a prospective student. They took us up into a building, like, to have a conversation about, like, you talk to upperclassmen. There was a junior. He was from Chicago. He had dreads. I'll never forget, because he said something I'll never forget it. And they asked all the upperclassmen, what is your favorite thing about Howard University? And this guy says, the diversity. And I'm sitting in there like, hell no, we had a Black school. Like, what is he talking about? Like, what is this man saying? And he went on to say, you know, we are from all different backgrounds, different places. We have different cultures. And it's all here, and I get to experience that. At that moment, that sparked an interest in me. And that's exactly what I value the most about being at Howard, was its diversity. I stayed in the Bethune Annex my freshman year, and we were at the top floor. We called ourselves the penthouse, Penthouse Sweet Honeys, right? We had the top floor. We would all gather in one of my girlfriend's rooms from Jersey. And in that room would be, she's from Jersey, I'm from PG, one of my friends was from D.C., another friend was from Virginia, another friend was from Charlotte, North Carolina, Miami. We were from everywhere. And we would sit and have these discussions, and everybody thought different. Everybody came from different backgrounds. That is what I'm trying to showcase on WHUT, is that we don't think the same, and that's what makes us powerful. We have different cultures. Heck, Baltimore culture is completely different from D.C. culture.
Without a doubt.
And yet WHUT reaches Baltimore, so we've got to show that side too. And that's what it's about. I don't focus so much on the pushing of the culture, but the showing of our perspectives, because if we leave it up to other entities, they'll say this one perspective is all of y'all. And we know good and well that that's not the case. So we've got to be the ones to show that when it comes to speaking on violence, arts, entertainment, politics, that you could put five Black people in a room and get five completely different perspectives.
Without a doubt.
And that's what I value, and that's what I believe is not value, because the thought is that black is just black is black, right? Black is so generalized. It's so generalized. And the fact that we sometimes, we generalize ourselves. Mm-hmm. That ain't just from the outside looking in. We generalize ourselves. We're generalized. And I would love for you to turn on WHUT and see all these different conversations happening of us sharing our perspective and sharing who we are and sharing the fact that we have a multitude of cultures. Because I tell you, PG County culture can differ from Montgomery County culture, can differ from Arlington and Fairfax. Mm-hmm. So it's all these cultures mixing together. It's all these thought processes mixing together and us saying, we got something to say. So here's the entity that can let you say what you want to say and tell the story you want to tell through your eyes, through your perspective. That's Howard University Television. That's what it should be. That's what it will be as long as I'm here. That's my goal, my objective.
That sounds like a mic drop.
Mic drop, and I'm out.
She is Angie Ann, Director of Content with Howard University Television, WHUT. Angie, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Bamonte.
And be sure, again, tell folks what they should be looking for tomorrow, the title 100%. Of the programming, and when it's going to be airing.
Absolutely. Just go to WHUT.org. Look for 202 Day. It's proud and loud. The full schedule is there, 6 a.m. We kick things off. We're going all the way till midnight, and there's something for everybody. Great stories, great perspectives. And I just want to add, remember, our stories and our inclusion is not anybody's exclusion. And the beauty of our history and what we know and the stories that we're telling is that anybody can relate, because they're human stories at the end of the day. This is human stories. And when you see it and you see this, the history of D.C. in various lights and the experiences of Washingtonians in very different, various lights, what you're going to see is this is a human conversation being had. These are human stories. And that's what matters, like humanizing us as well.
Folks, you have heard it. That's the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, February 1st. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. 202 Day is tomorrow. WHUT. Make sure you tune in. Have a great night.